Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, pod people, and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the show where two movies with something in common go head-to-head to figure out which one did it better. On this week's Rad Road Trip, in the red corner, dangerous narcissist Ferris Bueller bullies his best friend on his day off. While in the blue corner, a night on the town turns hellish until Thor, yes, Thor, saves the day during adventures in babysitting.
It's getting pretty tough coming up with new illnesses. It's a little childish, but then so is high school.
Annie, you're not going to school like this.
Call if you need us.
They bought it. How could I possibly be expected to handle school on a day like this?
Bueller.
Cameron Dave.
Get dressed and come on over.
Bueller.
He has been absent 9 times.
Bueller.
My father spent 3 years restoring this car.
Ooh. What are we gonna do?
What aren't we going to do?
Meet Chris Park. Getting ready for the greatest night of her life.
Hi.
I gotta cancel.
Now she's stuck babysitting the Anderson kids. What could possibly go wrong?
Chris, I'm in trouble. Hang up and sit down. I'll be there in half an hour.
So which film makes it home in one piece? And which gets grounded for life? You're about to find out in Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken.
Hello, Clash Podders. I'm Chris Tilley.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
And I'm Alex So. That's how it is in their family, Zane.
Good line, Alex. How are you both doing?
Yeah,
very
good.
Very well, thank you.
All right, mate. How are you?
Good. Small talk over.
Okay.
These are my choices this week. So why did I pick them?
Go on.
Well, we all grew up on Ferris Bueller.
No, not me.
It's iconic.
Not me.
And I've always had mixed emotions about the film that I'm looking forward to digging into.
Okay.
And I've always loved Adventures in Babysitting and don't feel like enough people have seen it, including the folks in this room.
Yeah.
So I'm really hoping you didn't hate it. But
babe.
I'm excited to find out.
What did I say? Literally, ad verbatim what I said. Okay, Thursday's going to be interesting.
So let's get going. My clue was teens on the town. We had a few guesses of Superbad versus Booksmart.
We've talked about that, haven't we?
That's on my list.
Yeah. I just don't think they go into town in either of those films. They both take place in house parties in the suburbs.
Yes.
Okay, that confused me. I followed that up with simply saying each film had a musical interlude.
Yeah, confusing. I thought that was a confusing clue.
Yeah, well, that's why we got a correct answer, because of the clue. one correct answer.
Which means it was a good clue. I know the rules.
That came from longtime listener Lara Jackson, whose prize is lunch at Chez Louis in Chicago, followed by dinner at Le Pont Bleu in Chicago.
Lovely.
Which nicely brings us to the connection section.
Okay, good. My kind of town, Chicago is my kind of town.
I think that was going to be my third clue, was Sinatra singing that.
Yeah, both set in Chicago, although very different looks
very
at Chicago.
Places,
one is
yeah.
lovely, one is an idyllic place full of fun and joy and parades. The other is a John Carpenter movie.
Which makes sense because it's produced by John Carpenter's producer.
What, Deborah Hill?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, shit. I didn't have that for Thursday.
It all makes sense.
That's great. Yeah. There's a certain scene where you go, sorry, is this the fog I'm watching?
What else we got?
Those cars that you see in films from the US where they've got wooden panels down the side, they're called station wagons, mm-hmm. and they've got fake wood mm-hmm. down the side of the car. There's both the cars in these films are those cars.
No, mm-hmm. wait. I mean,
what? They are, though.
I mean, I've written down car troubles, both movies revolve around a car. That's a Ferrari Spider, I
no,
believe.
The parents' car. No, Chrissy's car in Adventures in Babysitting, wooden panels.
Yeah.
Ferris's mum and dad's car, wooden panels.
Oh, okay. But the famous car from Ferris is the Ferrari.
I know. All right. What about...
Rich kid problems.
Yes.
Rich kid problems. Both movies are kids from wealthy families.
Righteous dude. Ferris is a righteous dude. Mm. And Chris is described as a righteous babe.
Good.
The Beatles and the Rolling Stones. Kind of the same thing, but not the same thing.
Mm, totally not the same thing.
Yeah, but that's a fun connection, isn't it? Like, but also it's quite good because it's like the Beatles, wholesome, daytime film, Ferris. Rolling Stones, more rebellious, darker, nighttime film.
Edgy.
Yeah, and also you're amazed that they got clearance in both films.
Yeah, I thought that, especially watching Twist and Shout. I was like, you never hear this in movies because of money.
And Paul McCartney wasn't happy.
No.
Jane Jenkins and Janet Hirshenan, who I think played important roles in both these films.
They were the casting director.
Yeah, they cast both movies. And it launched quite a few careers, both of these films did.
Both happen in one day.
Yes.
Both happen in one day. Saves on costume changes. That's why they think John Hughes set Ferris Bueller in one day, because he makes his movies in the edit. He shoots everything and then puts it together in the edit. So it solved him a lot of problems as long as it took place.
Continuity problems.
Yeah, exactly.
They both end with racing to beat the parents home.
Yeah.
You got to hide when you're in a car next to your dad. That happens in both films.
Yep.
It's quite specific, that one. They both have jokes involving license plates. I'll get to them when we are doing the movies.
Yeah, but I want to talk about the one on Thursday, yeah.
There's a lot in Ferris Bueller I hadn't realised, but Jake Gyllenhaal pointed it out in a recent video he did about Ferris Bueller.
Which... A video he sent to you?
No, it was a thing he did with Josh Gad, reuniting the cast of Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Okay.
And he pointed out all these little jokes.
Why was Jake Gyllenhaal doing that?
He's a super fan, apparently.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
Was he? Did you get the feel that he was, or someone had gone, Jake's up for this, make sure he's seen the movie?
I mean, it was nice. I think he was genuinely excited. It was exciting to see them all together, all the cast today. Even his parents were on it.
In Ferris? The ones
Oh, okay. Still knocking about.
Because they got married, didn't they?
And they
divorced.
Mm. They got divorced. And both films.
I do. I have that. Yeah. So that's why I made a noise in that section where I'm normally quite quiet. I read that.
And I'll end.
Carry on, Chris. Do as much trivia as possible because I don't have any.
I've got all of that shit.
I'm going to end with the fact that both films have post-credit stings.
Which I didn't even know. So I didn't. No shade on Adventures in Babysitting, but I think I might have turned it off quite quickly.
Ugh.
Ferris Bueller, though, I've seen Ferris Bueller a lot of times and I had no idea because I've always just turned it off.
Okay, I watched the Ferris Bueller one. What's the Adventures in Babysitting, or are you going
to
save it?
You have to wait till Thursday to find out, Alex.
I've seen it and I'm doing that movie on Thursday. Fine, whatever. I don't care.
Well, as you just have to wait because on Thursday, Alex is babysitting the kids, meaning today Vicky is bunking off school. So, V, take us on that journey.
What would you do if you had a stolen day off? Would you enjoy a spectator sport, take in some culture, save your best friend's life and propose to your amazing girlfriend? No, you wouldn't, because you're a cretin. Not like the personification of innocence, Ferris Bueller, who does all of those things because he is either the world's oldest or the world's youngest 17-year-old. Either way, getting shit-faced, drunk and stoned is not on his agenda, like it would be yours at that age, and don't you deny it. So Ferris takes the day to help Cameron face up to his demons and his sister face off with, then get off with, drug taker or drug dealer, either way a drug person, Charlie Sheen, before racing his parents home so he doesn't get in trouble for skiving. Is this a deeply existential film which charmingly visualises the quest for an authentic versus inauthentic life, drawing on Nietzsche's process of the three metamorphoses of the spirit and Sartre's concept of mauvaise foi, or another knockabout John Hughes coming-of-age film? Anyone?
I mean, is it? Don't look at me.
I think it's a deeply existential film.
Okay.
I do.
I mean, I think, you know, the personification of innocence is wrong. Ferris Bueller is a psychopath. Discuss.
Do you think so?
Oh, my God. There's a whole argument for him being a psychopath. I'll go through it with you. Like, when we come to the bits, the psychopath test, he fits about six or seven of the criteria to make someone a psychopath.
Interesting. Mm. Well, this leads neatly on in a very professional way to this question, because I think your feelings around Ferris are determined possibly by when you first saw this film. So when did you first see this film? If you say this week, that might give us a clue as to why you think he's a psychopath.
Not this week, but quite late. So obviously I missed the initial bubble. A lot of my friends saw it around the right time, I think. So I'm not coming at this with nostalgia. I think it was around uni time I watched it. And I remember thinking of it more of a necessity to watch this. I had no great desire to see it, but obviously it's such a cultural milestone for a lot of people. I sort of watched it and I was like, okay, all right, that's Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I have different feelings this time.
Sure. What about you?
Yeah, I saw it when I was a kid on video and I liked it, thought it was funny, but Ferris was just a bit scary. He was a bit too cool. He was a bit, I sort of couldn't really empathise with him or understand. And I didn't particularly like Cameron. You know, I don't know. I had mixed feelings about it. And then I watched it when I was a bit older and thought, oh, Ferris is just horrible. This is a horrible film about a horrible person.
Yes.
And I imagine if older people were watching this for the first time, they would just hate him. Mm. He's someone to look up to when you're a kid. But when you're an adult, you're like, this bloke's annoying. And then watching it this time, I had very different feelings because there's a lot going on that I'd never picked up on. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I watched it when I was like a late teenager. I think I was at college, university. Mm-hmm. But that was the right time for me.
It wasn't on Mark's shelf, this, was it?
Oh, no. No. But there was a good time because it was a time of like no fewer responsibilities. So that idea of skiving off and being able to skive off, I was at exactly the right age for it because I was like 19, 20 and I did a lot of skiving off, but within the safe parameters of actually being an adult and not getting into too much trouble, which is my kind of skiving off. I never nicked off school.
No, not once?
No, I didn't. The closest I came was I was in this band and we nicked off to do band practice and we got caught.
Nicked off? Skived?
We said, you say nicking off.
Okay, we said skived.
Yeah, it's funny because we're not that far apart, like miles away.
Well, that's a big
I mean,
big
culturally,
difference.
Sure. Yeah. But in terms of the geography of where we grew up.
Yeah, sure.
It's
just
a different county. But
as the crow flies, not that far.
We said nicking, we say bunking off.
The crow just doesn't fly that direction.
Don't go Yorkshire, no. We're dying that you shoot it out of the sky the minute you go over there. This cheerful Lancashire crow making its way over.
It's free spirit. It burn, were they throwing whippets at it?
Yeah, exactly. And then eating it because you're tight and you won't pay for food. I was led to believe that when I was growing up. I was told to fear the Yorkshireman. And it turns out my father was correct about that.
Wow.
So I've lost my place now. Anyway, right, we've done that bit. That's good.
Really have lost your place, haven't you? Yeah. You were talking about skiving of school. I bet you never have, Chris.
Are we going to do this again? We've had this whole conversation for about 10 minutes on an episode.
Okay, apologies. I'll just jump straight into the background section then. We've just got told off. That's fine. All right, here we go. Because I know this is the best bit, so watch out.
Now let's do it again. So I bunked off school. I went to Brighton to see a badly drawn boy gig, and lo and behold, he was in a bar when I was looking for the gig, and I asked him for directions, and he invited me to have a drink with him.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's amazing. I bunked off school once. No, Skive, to watch The Crow on VHS with all my mates, and we all did it on the same day, so we all got caught.
Brilliant.
We need to get new banter.
Yeah, we do. I mean, we need some new stories, but I don't know how to generate new stories.
We can't remember them.
Live a life.
We've got
it's
stories.
Not the same. All right then. What's your technique for throwing a sickie from work? Or do you not want to say?
He doesn't work.
Oh yeah.
I don't actually ever really throw sickies.
Do you want to tell? I've told you my one before, which is
why are you doing it again?
No, wait, because you don't know this one. I don't think I once had a job doing data entry for Universal Music, and I was terrible at it, and I missed my first day because I stayed up late with you. Actually, I've just remembered. I stayed up very late.
Woo.
So on the way, I tried to go, and I got to Stratford Station, and I was like, "This is not happening." So I went back, and I rang in sick, and I couldn't think of anything, and I told them I'd fallen down the escalator, and so for the whole temp job, I had to wear a massive bandage on my knee because I told them that I'd torn my knee open, and it was really hot and summery, so I was wearing skirts and I had this sticky sweaty bandage with no wound underneath it. That's my best one. Very silly. All right, here we go. So this film was written and directed by the legendary John Hughes, because I do love a John Hughes film. I don't know how you feel about him, but I very much love John Hughes films. And apparently, so the legend goes, he pitches the idea to Paramount with a single line. I want to do a movie about a kid who takes a day off from school and that's all I know. And they go, yeah, go on then. But also be quick because there's a writer's strike. And he said, no problem. I will be really quick and I'll do this in about 4 days. That's the story.
Yeah. But apparently this was his thing. I find it amazing. I mean, having tried to write something quickly, like Planes, Trains and Automobiles, 16 Candles, Pretty in Pink, he wrote them all in a week, as the story goes.
Well, we talked about Home Alone recently. That was a week as well.
Yeah.
That was his thing.
And he is very good, so he can do it.
He sort of enters, his friends say he entered a trance-like state where he just could focus so, clinically on the writing process that he wasn't distracted.
But the difference
I'm
is,
like, ooh, look, a crow.
But the difference is he's directing these scripts as well. So he's got the story, the characters and all the photography in his head, what isn't on the page. And also it means he allows for a lot of improvisation set because he likes to have the actors play around. He casts people who are similar to the characters. And so I think he has an advantage there in that he's in control of everything. So even if the script isn't where it needs to be, he knows he can get it there once he starts shooting.
And it goes back to what I said as well. He doesn't edit in the script. He edits the film. So he shoots everything. Like the first cut of Ferris was 2 hours, 45 minutes long. And then from there, he works backwards and cuts it down.
Well, that makes sense. So although he has later said that Matthew Broderick as Ferris was the only actor he could think of, I read that Johnny Depp was offered it. And also
Johnny Depp says he was offered it.
That's what I read. Johnny Depp saying...
On Inside the Actors Studio.
Yeah, they offered it to me.
They definitely offered it to me.
I don't think that would have been the right choice.
No.
But only because of the way he grew up. In 1980-odd, that I suppose that would have been fine.
Well, those casting agents I mentioned, Jane Jenkins and Janet Hirshen on, they said the only other person they were considering, and I think this would have worked, was John Cusack.
Yes, that would have worked.
Who's a very similar to Ferris Bueller in a lot of those 80s movies.
Definitely.
And what was
Anthony Michael Hall for Cameron, I read, but turned it down.
Okay.
But then, I don't know. Because
Emilio Estevez for Cameron.
Yeah. Mm.
There's that famous story that Alan Ruck credits Emilio Estevez with giving him his career. He says, every time I see Emilio Estevez, I want to go over and kiss him because him turning down this role meant that I had a career.
Yeah. And Jennifer Grey, she'd done Red Dawn with Charlie Sheen. Charlie Sheen's hardly in it, but he's a bit of a scene stealer, so it's worth mentioning. There was this whole backstory to his character. He hasn't even got a name, as he's just called Boy in Police Station.
He was called Garth Vogel or something.
Yeah, but in the actual credits, he's not called that.
No, he's just called Boy in Police Station.
Yeah. So all that Garth Vogel stuff just got scrapped.
It's a weird, the backstory to that. The backstory was that he, in the original version, he was a friend of Ferris's who Ferris had failed to save from getting hooked on drugs and dropping out of school. And so that plays into why Ferris is determined to show Cameron the best day ever, because he failed a friend in the past.
Wow. Mm. That's quite dark.
I'm glad it was all cut.
Yeah, it's brilliant as it is. It's because it's so odd. Mm. It's just good that he just comes out of nowhere and then disappears.
Do you know he stayed up for 48 hours? I believe that.
I believe it, but I don't believe that's any extra effort. Do you know what I mean? It's not like, I'm going to do something special for the next 2 days, which is not sleep.
I've been up for 48 hours. Really? Yeah, for the role. For the role. I'm a provincial method. Method. I haven't just rolled in from a strip club.
It's one of those internet stories. It'd be more interesting. He slept for a full week before he took on a role. You'd be like, oh, wow, okay. But him staying up for 2 days, yeah, of course he did.
He's so gorgeous in it, though.
He's just unbelievable looking.
I think this is when I fell in love with Josh.
Yeah. He's unbelievable looking and he looks good knackered as well, which is really something. I mean, that's youth for you. Can't do that nowadays.
No.
So who else have we got? Mia Sara, who I was thinking of because we did, what's it called? Legend. Because she was only a youngster. So she's the only teenager in the cast because she was 18. And it is interesting. So John Hughes apparently didn't want her because he said he wanted someone older to give Sloane Peterson a bit the dignity that she needs. And I see what he means. She does a brilliant job. Mia Sara, I think she's really good.
I think she's... I mean, granted, she's not given much to do. I think of the main three, she's the weak link.
But she does have a very dignified, quiet presence.
Mm, he said he wanted her to be elegant and restrained, a sort of as if she was like an older woman. That's who he thinks Ferris would go out with, someone who would tolerate him and could also control him if she needed to.
Okay.
And I get that sense from her. She does seem to be quite powerful.
Yeah, but you can't control a psychopath. He's just too charming. He's going to charm you into doing whatever he wants to do.
Yeah, but he's very kind.
Is he? He ditches them to sing on a float and doesn't even, they're like, where is he? And
that's
he's just pissed off and is like, look at all these people adoring me. I don't care about your day anymore, Cameron, even though that's how I got you to give me the Ferrari in the first place. Your special day, Cameron. See ya on a float now. So, twist and shout.
Entertaining his friends is a lovely thing. It's a lovely thing to do.
I never thought of it like that. I hope you're not going to ruin the twist and shout scene for me, because it is selfish. I never thought of that.
Yeah, of course it is.
Just thought, what fun.
Of course it is. It's all about their day together, and especially showing Cameron a good time. And he's off doing whatever he does, an attention-seeking exercise from strangers, just adoration.
It isn't about showing Cameron a good time, I don't think.
Of course it's not. That's what I'm saying. He just manipulates Cameron like a psychopath, tells him what he needs to hear to get the car in the first place.
Oh, I see. Oh, this is interesting.
To help Cameron.
No.
Yes, this is all. We'll get there.
The Fight Club theory.
Well, let's do the
Fight Club
theory.
It's not a Fight Club theory.
No.
That's bollocks. But what he's doing is he's trying to push Cameron to stand up to his dad, and he nails it.
No. You see the bit where Cameron's like, this has gone too far, and like, you know, I'm going to get in trouble. And Ferris basically says, I'll take the heat for you. Let me take responsibility for this. That is the behavior of a psychopath, a manipulator who has finally reached the point where they might lose their mark.
It's the first time.
And so has to absolve like the responsibility in a way of keeping that person under their control.
No, it's the first time he's lost control of the situation. And that's why he says that, because he has been in control this whole time. But Cameron finally does something that he's not expecting. And so he doesn't know. He panics.
Yeah, he panics. He panics as a psychopath and then does
not
what
a
psychopath. He's a psychopath.
The Fight Club theory. So as much as I love Ferris, and I've seen it 3 or 4 times, I didn't know this theory until you mentioned it, Chris, the other week.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love it so very, very much.
It really works as well.
Yeah. So Ferris is a figment of Cameron's imagination, which is, and so in the same way in Fight Club that Tyler Durden is, and it's, you know, this the split of your, a side of yourself that you can't fully embrace or accept, gets to sort of run riot for a day kind of thing. And there are sort of the save Ferris markers around town, like on the water tower and wherever else they are clear indications that there's a sort of, it's all in Cameron's head or Ferris's head.
He never leaves his bed. It's all in Cameron's head. It's all like the story is told from him lying in his bed trying to figure out his life.
Yeah. And that he does destroy the car in real life, but in a fugue state. So he gets out of bed and he's like, this is what I have to do to confront my dad.
But it also fits with the fact that, like, I think there's actually a cut in the film where Cameron starts opening up about his family and like how his dad doesn't love his mum, but he loves the car and they're in an awful relationship, an awful marriage. And then it cuts to Ferris's parents, who are just, they're too nice. They're such a fantastical creation of what parents are like, that you're like, they are what someone who is building this artificial version, what their parents would be like. Just too nice.
They are perfect. Yeah.
So in love and so adoring of Ferris.
That's a good point. So let's talk about the film, because that is a good point.
But I would like to say on that front, I mean, it's obviously bollocks, but I think there is a grain of truth to it, in that Tyler Durden is there to set the narrator free, effectively.
Yeah.
And that's what Ferris is doing. Ferris is trying to set Cameron free. And so they've essentially got the same mission. So there is a similarity there, but obviously it's not factually correct, because Ferris is actually real.
Yeah, this is what I think.
And a psychopath, yes. Correct.
Well, the point is, let's talk about the film. Let's talk about the film, because we are doing now anyway, but I have to say it, because then we get to move into the next segment officially, and that means I'm good at my job.
Yeah, how it works.
Which is important to me. Oh. So Ferris pulls a sickie, because it's a nice day, and because life moves pretty fast, and if you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it. Which is just lovely.
That's a fun scene in the bedroom when the parents and Jeannie are in there, because on set, all four of those people are in love, because Broderick and Jennifer Grey had just got together and they had just got together. So that's
sweet. Mm. But I see your
slightly
point.
Weird because she's his sister. I mean, it's fine for
them.
They're
acting though.
They don't. But when you know that, they don't seem like brother and sister at all at any point anyway. Mm. So it's sort of fine and a bit gross.
Yeah. So Ferris has taken a day off, hasn't he? Because Ferris, like a psychopath, feels entitled to everything. And he's entitled to his day off because he's just decided he's entitled to a day off.
Yeah.
And he charms, like a psychopath, his parents into giving him a day off.
It's weird, because I do agree with you, his parents don't seem real, because he is at once a grown-up person. He's grown up enough to be left in the house by himself, which you don't really do with kids. You're not supposed to. But he's
when
very
he's 17,
babied.
You can.
Yeah,
you?
I think so. But they baby him a lot. They really baby him.
Well, no, that's because he manipulates them by acting like a baby.
Okay.
I think it's a lot of his behaviour makes them talk back to him like that because he sort of knows how to manipulate everyone in his world.
Love you.
Yeah, but then they don't think he's enough of a baby that he can't, you know, they assume he could look after himself and not hurt himself all day. So there's a weird...
What were you doing when you were 17 around the house?
Banging into stuff. Did they have rubber corners on every work surface until you were 17?
The one I got left alone in the house and my mum and sister went away and I took a car and I crashed the car.
Okay, so I can see what's happening here.
Yeah, it was really bad. I was just running this... Can I say that? Yeah, I can say that because a lot of parties involved are dead and also my sister doesn't give a shit. But yeah, I crashed the car. Oh, it was awful. Awful. What a stupid thing to do.
So you took it. You weren't feigning illness when you crashed it?
No, I just
took
it.
You were just left on your own?
I was left on my mum and sister went away for a week and I was left in the house and being all responsible. I took the car, I didn't have a licence, just took it and smashed it up.
I'm seeing a whole new side to you. How did you crash it?
Oh, God, I crashed it into a bus. I really minor.
They do go fat. Oh, wait, what, a bus?
Were you just watching the film Speed and fell asleep?
I crashed it into a bus, but it was just at a fucking T-junction. I just took it wide because I couldn't drive. I didn't have a licence. I just took it wide and I just sort of...
Dragged the car along the side.
Yeah. I kind of dinked a bus, basically. But it was a very old car and it was knackered anyway. And so the front just went and just like crumpled. And the bus was fine and no one was hurt. Okay. But the police were very interested because I didn't have a licence.
What happens if you don't have a licence and you crash a car?
I got arrested.
Okay.
And I got charged, not charged, cautioned.
Okay.
And I managed to get it all done before my mum got back, which was good.
Well, you got the car fixed?
No, I didn't get it fixed, but I got cautioned before she got back.
Right.
So she didn't know about that bit.
She knew the car was fucked.
She knew the car was fucked, though, yeah. It was fine. It wasn't a write-off or anything. Just a bit expensive. Oh, God, that feels good, actually, to get rid of that.
It seems like a little bit of therapy there.
Yeah, thank you so much, everyone. It's not time for a break, is it, or anything? Let me just have a look. No. We can still talk about the film. Okay, cool.
Psychopath. So, grandiose sense of self-worth.
But he does justify it, but in a way that made me laugh, which is like he's licked his hands to get the clammy hands thing, which he says is childish and stupid, but so is high school. And it's like, yes, Ferris, I totally agree with you. School is childish and stupid. Why not miss it? No?
No, I'm with him. I'm just surprised he didn't do the ET thing of putting the thermometer against the light. Then you.
Yeah, I thought he had like a cold hot water bottle under his pillow or something. I didn't know. Licking your hands. I'm not sure it works.
No, it's a bit disgusting.
It's gross.
But the thing is, so I like Matthew Broderick a lot in this film because the first time I watched this film, I was surprised to be, especially because it's a John Hughes film, you're with the popular kid. So as Grace, the principal's assistant, later says, he's this righteous dude and all the gangs like him.
The sportos, motorheads, geeks, sluts, bloods, wastoids, dweebies, dickheads.
They all adore him. Mm. And I'm not used to being through someone's journey. Later, obviously, Cameron comes into it and it is mostly Cameron's film in terms of the narrative. Mm. But you're with the popular guy. And normally me, not the most popular person in school, would be like, oh, I don't want to spend time with you. I'm not into that at all. But,
and normally in the previous 5 years, that's all John Hughes had made was films about the not popular kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it's such an amazing trick that he manages to get me to like him.
And do you like him?
Yeah.
It's a weird one. Like almost from scene to scene, like ignoring the fact he's a psychopath. If we take that as like, okay, I'm wrong. I'm not. But if you just take him on his charm, he's a little too cocky.
No.
He's a little too, like, confident. Like, there's something. I think the bit that, there's one scene where I'm like, it's too much. And it's where he goes, he's talking about the Ferrari. And he's like, if you guys can pick one up, they are so choice.
Yes,
and it's like,
that's annoying.
It's like Fetch and Mean Girls. It's like, choice is never going to be a thing. Don't make choice a thing.
Yeah. Well, I don't like him when I thought his whole motivation was the fact that he asked for a car and he got a computer.
Yeah.
That's a spoilt brat talking. And,
yeah.
he brings it up several times that Jeannie got a car and he didn't. But then when I see it through this lens this time of the fact, no, this is all part of a larger plan to change Cameron's psyche for the better, then actually I do like him. It's an amazing thing he's doing here.
You
yeah.
really buy that? I fundamentally do not buy that whatsoever. This is not about him trying to make Cameron.
Even Sloan says it in the film, oh, I see what you've done. She says it at the end just before he...
Because he's a psychopath and he's made her believe this lie. It's not the case. He's not doing it for Cameron. He's doing it for him because he's selfish.
What does he get out of it?
He gets the day he wants in a nice car in the city that he couldn't do without that car. So he manipulates Cameron into giving him the car.
They can get to the city without a car, can't they? Is there no mind you, I don't know. Is there no public transport?
It's okay for Alex to be wrong. It's fine.
That's true. I hadn't thought of that. All right, let's have a quick break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let's meet Cameron. There is the very it's really famous, the doing the register and the teacher just doing the... Do you want to do it?
Bill Stein.
Yeah. Ben Stein.
Ben Stein.
Yeah, Ben Stein. Win Ben Stein's money.
Yes, and former speechwriter for Richard Nixon.
His resignation speech. He's a fascinating character.
That is incredible. So obviously he's running through the register and he's going, Bueller. And so now if you're being ignored, that's what you do. Mm-hmm. But I do think, and also the lecture he does when he does the economics lecture, the kids, the way that John Hughes has shot those kids looking bored, it's just, I love it. Mm. So they just look fantastic.
Not in the script. He was doing that lecture offset and John Hughes heard him doing it and was like, you've got to do that in the film. Mm. And he does it. And it's great. I mean, it's so weird. Like, he sort of basically, he says the story is Richard Nixon introduced him to a man named Bill Sapphire, who was a columnist for New York Times, who introduced him to a guy who worked for Warner Brothers, who introduced him to John Hughes. And because him and John Hughes are about the only Republicans in Hollywood, John Hughes put him in the movie.
Yeah, I don't know if John Hughes was a Republican.
This is Ben Stein.
Yeah, no, I know. He says a lot of stuff, though. Mm.
Right, so let's see.
Very slowly.
And boringly. All right, let's meet Cameron, because Cameron's really important. So apart from the fact that I've always loved his treehouse so very much and his room in the canopy of the forest, I just think it's amazing. Mm. So Cameron's a mess. He says he's shredded. But because Ferris is his best friend, he just says, you're not dying, you just can't think of anything good to do.
He's quite a frightening character, Cameron, because he's so passive-aggressive.
He's also got a God complex, which I just realised for the first time. So he's singing a hymn and he replaces the word Jesus with Cameron.
Does he?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that is. Yeah. But he's filled with so much anger. And obviously, Ferris says partly he's doing this because make him less tightly wound.
Yeah.
But he's quite frightening. The thought of him exploding, I guess he does at the end. I don't know if I don't know how Ferris and him are mates, actually.
Because his dad has a Ferrari.
I assumed they'd been friends since they were little kids, really little, and when they grew up they were different, but you still always stay friends.
He offers no threat to Ferris either. He's not in competition with Ferris. He's much weaker.
I don't think Ferris sees anyone as a threat, though, because he knows he can outwit everyone, because he does.
Mm. Because he's a psychopath.
No, I think he's a narcissist.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is the thing. They're going to take the day together.
So, but they've got to bust Sloane Peterson out of school. So it is funny.
Yeah, it is.
What's funny is Rooney saying, "You produce a corpse. I want to see his dead grandmother firsthand. Roll her old bones over."
It's really, really funny because it's not. I think the reaction stuff, the physical comedy is all good. And when they realise that Ferris is on the other line and it can't be him on the call, and there's a lot of like pratfalls, and but that's not that funny. But those lines are funny.
Oh, yeah, and I disagree. The bit where what's her name, Grace, his assistant, the bit where she takes the phone and it's Cameron on one end of the phone pretending to be Mr. Peterson while she's on the other end of the phone pretending to be Rooney, yeah, is just such a brilliant escalation.
It's interesting
of that
watching that scene because she's from the Chicago improv scene,
yeah,
and Geoffrey Jones was struggling with this sequence and she said, "Let's do it how we would do improvisation, where everything you do in this scene, I'm going to try and impede you physically and vocally." And when you watch the scene, that's exactly what she's doing. She looks like she's helping him, but she's getting in his way and he's getting more and more frustrated. I think she's brilliant as well.
She's fantastic.
With the pens in the hair that she came up with.
The introduction where she's sniffing Tippex.
Because that's just such a time pause as well. Because you remember, like, we weren't allowed Tippex at school and it wasn't because it gets on stuff. It's like they didn't want kids sniffing. Yeah. Well, I'm sure it was at every school. Like, kids would get, well, no one chuffed Tippex as far as I can tell at school, but it was verboten. You were not allowed it.
And obviously, John Hughes saw something in her because she's the car rental woman in Planes, Trains and Automobiles that winds up Steve Martin when he explodes.
Edie McClurg, that's her name. Yeah, she got the gig. You know the line you keep mentioning, "He's a righteous dude."
Yeah.
She made that up at the audition and that's what got her the part in the first place. And we have to talk about Geoffrey Jones because he is brilliant here.
Yeah.
And he says, "Hughes told me at the time, and I thought he was just blowing his own horn, he said, 'You were going to be known for this for the rest of your life.' And I thought, sure, but he was right." Known for something else now as well.
Didn't quite work out in a very different way. But he is very good in
this. He's so good.
So they borrow Cameron's dad's car and so our day can begin. But this is where we establish that this is going to be Cameron's film because he's the one with conflict. Ferris has no conflict. Ferris has got something he needs to do today, which is not get caught. But in terms of internal conflict, I don't think there is any.
It's interesting, isn't it? It's really Cameron's story because Cameron is the one who goes through whether he steps into the mission of the film, whether he accepts his mission of going on this journey to the city or not. So it's really, he is our protagonist.
Well comedy is the only genre where you can have a protagonist who doesn't change over the course of a film. And Ferris does not change, but obviously Cameron goes on a huge journey. So it's, as you say, it becomes his film.
Yeah. So they pick up Sloane and then they go to the Sears Tower. And this is where this film is either going to sort of set your teeth on edge or you're just going to be into it because it's all going to be very good, clean, innocent fun. Which I did mean, I'm not just, if when I was 17, if I'd have taken a day off school, which I didn't, I wouldn't have gone to an art gallery and tried to bust into a restaurant. You would have gone straight to the off license.
And you wouldn't have been able to as well. You wouldn't have been able to do as much as they fit in to a day here.
No.
It doesn't work. The timeline simply doesn't work. They get to do too much, which again feeds this Fight Club theory that it's all in Cameron's head. He has the perfect day that is literally impossible to have.
Yeah. And even so, at this point, he proposes to Sloane and it's just weird. I found it nice rather than creepy, but it should be creepy, but it's just quite a nice thing to do, weirdly.
I think taps into what Chris is saying. It's the way she plays it, the way she reacts to his proposal is what makes it not weird.
Yeah.
And it's sweet at the end when she says she knows she's going to marry him.
Yeah,
it's just sweet.
They would want to marry him.
They
Why
just
not?
Know these two people.
Yeah. I do love the bit where he pretends to be the Sausage King to get into that restaurant.
Abe Froman.
It's funny, but I think this says more about me than it does about the film and about my fear of a hefty bill. Then, do they ever deal with who's going to pay for the bill?
I was going to say the only victim in this movie is Abe Froman.
Yeah.
Because he loses his table and maybe he does end up paying for it. I don't know.
The logic here breaks down as well because if he's using a booking at that time and he looks at the thing, it's like, well, Abe Froman is going to arrive any moment for that booking.
Oh, I never thought
that. Agreed. There are some holes.
Fight Club theory.
He said the only reason that scene is there is he wanted to put them in the same place as Ferris's dad.
Okay.
And so it seemed a business meeting would be the logical place.
Do you recognise the French restaurant from another classic 80s movie that I fucking love? I'll just tell you. It's the restaurant where the Blues Brothers visit to go get their trumpeter, Mr. Fabulous, and throw shrimp in each other's mouths from the Blues Brothers.
How nice.
The Sears Tower, or the Willis Tower, as it is now known, when they visit that, it was the tallest building in the world.
They say that in the film. Mm. Okay.
But it was only that for 25 years, which has been now surpassed by, it's the 25th. Tallest building in the world now.
So they threw up one every year that was taller.
Pretty much, yeah.
Cool.
Well, every city wants one. Burj Khalifa was the...
That is still the tallest.
I've been up it.
Have you really?
Yeah.
What is that?
I didn't really want to go to... I ended up in Dubai. I didn't really want to be there. It was a long, long, boring
work
story.
Work or fun?
Fun.
You went to Dubai, yeah. I'm
exactly. It wasn't part of the plan.
The woman who runs the news agent on my high street singing the praises of Dubai. I was like, but don't you not get into trouble for like drinking? Like, and she's like, well, you just drink in certain places. I'm like, that doesn't work for me.
No, I'd be too scared.
You drink in certain places. Yeah, drink everywhere. Yeah.
The street.
What are you talking about?
The street, in the middle of the road. That's what you're not allowed to do.
That's the one thing. There's more than one thing you're not allowed
There's
to do.
There's a lot of things. Yeah.
So meanwhile, Mom has gone to check on Ferris. He has eluded her with quite an elaborate rope and pulley system.
Oh, yeah. I remember that being better.
I went off it this time. Yeah.
It's because the arm's sticking out and it's like, wow, his mum's a moron.
She's an idiot, yeah.
But it's very Home Alone, isn't it? There's a few bits in this.
Yeah, good point.
Like when Rooney's trying to break into the house as well. Mm. It's like a literal forerunner for what John Hughes did
in Home
Alone.
Oh my God, yeah, my notes. John Hughes loves a dog flap.
Dog flap. The bit where he's trying to peer in the window. Like he's like Joe Pesci trying to peer in the window. He gets his foot stuck in the mud and the shoe comes off and he's trying to pull the shoe out of the mud.
And you know another film he did that's like that? Home Alone 2.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Exactly. I mean, that's the thing. I don't like this bit because I think it's better in Home Alone.
Is before Home Alone.
Yeah, I know, but because I've seen,
it's
you
a
know.
Work in progress.
Sure, he's getting there. But I do think the dog is impressive because that is the scariest dog I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, I think training a dog to pull that face is pretty good.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, I know, but it feeds into the myth that Rottweilers are really dangerous.
Because it looks really murderous. Really,
there's a really efficient line around this point in the film, which I was like, oh, that's good. And it's when Jeannie goes in to complain to Rooney about Ferris and tell him that he's bunked off school. We've done every different variation of how to skive bunk Nick off school today.
Yeah.
She says, well, hello, Jeannie. Who's bothering you now? Amazingly efficient, because that is like, wow.
Yeah, that's good.
You learn so much about Jeannie being this person who just is like, this person's bothering me. Sort this out. I have this problem with this in one single line.
That's true. That's very good. So back with the trio, so Ferris, Sloane and Cameron, they got to the Art Institute, which I do think looks very relaxing. And now being a grown up, if I could get just one day to myself, I would like to go to an art gallery and stand and stare at things.
Yeah, and you know, you said that we wouldn't go do this on our day off. We'd go to the pub. But he was saying John Hughes, geeky John Hughes, went to this Art Institute as a kid. This was his place of refuge and he would spend the day there. So he's sort of paying homage to his own childhood there. I think this is a really lovely scene, actually.
Yeah, me too.
Didn't work initially, though. It was they put it after the big parade scene, after Twist and Shout, and they set it to some different music. I think a classical score. Mm. And audiences, test audience was like, we hate that scene.
Okay.
And they just put it to different music and moved it about, and voila, everyone loves it now.
That's good. So he does it in the...
Do you like that music they use? I fell in love with that music.
I can't remember.
In the art gallery?
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
It's beautiful. It's the Smiths. joking aside, I genuinely think this was my way into the Smiths, liking this piece of music and trying to find out what it was, and it was an instrumental version of one of their songs.
It just washed over
There's
me.
There's a whole Smiths debate going on Twitter right now.
Oh, is there?
About us.
Oh,
us.
No.
Yeah, it's fine.
I'm not
it's
nervous.
Fine. No, we don't come out badly.
Really?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. Tells you why Chris and Twitter and this podcast, it's like some sort of holy trinity. It's like a lot of our dear Clash Podders are very much Chris.
Oh, okay. Okay.
There's a lot of people going on there.
Hello, my people. Hello. your master is speaking.
Oh, God,
why are you dissing the Smiths? It's like,
it doesn't matter. But yeah, when Cameron is looking into that painting a Sunday afternoon on the island of La Grande Jetée, it's just haunting. He's looking at that child's face and he's sort of...
Haunting's a bit strong, but it's affecting. It's affecting.
Well, the closer he looks at that face, the less of a face it is.
I get pontilism. I know how it works. I think it's a comedy, so I get that he's like, oh, I'm no one. And I get that. But I don't... I
okay,
don't...
if you get it, well, let's not discuss it.
Oh, no.
Right.
I just don't feel haunted by it, that's all. But
it's because the Smiths are playing.
God, maybe that's what it was. Yeah. I was like, what's this fucking music? but let's get to the bit that's obviously the best bit, which you hate, Alex.
I don't hate it.
Which is the Von Steuben Day parade. Mm. So I didn't know who Von Steuben was. I had absolutely no idea.
It's quite strange.
Yeah. I went to all the trouble of looking it up. So for anyone that doesn't know, I also didn't know that it's like an... So it's a national holiday in the States. So, or it's celebrated in many cities. I don't know what that means. So does that mean it's like countrywide or just...
Citywide?
No, it said many cities.
Okay.
So it's not just Chicago.
All right.
They have one in New York.
What is it? Do you want to tell me what it is
Oh,
first?
I'm so sorry. So... here we go. Baron Friedrich von Steuben was a Prussian-born person who arrived in the States as a volunteer, and he offered his services to George Washington in the American Revolutionary War. And he is regarded, I'm quoting, literally quoting.
I can tell you quoting, yeah. But go on.
I can't be asked. I'll just do it. He's one of the most important German Americans, as his training of the young American troops made victory against the British possible, and thus his work helped in gaining independence for the United States of America.
Wow.
So that's why they love him.
Sounds like a wanker to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, hates this guy.
Give us our country back.
Yeah, you've still got our language though, don't you?
Yeah, so
kind of.
They love him.
You've bastardised our language, haven't you?
Ooh, steady, big swing.
I'm joking. I love... Love America. What?
Good. They need that. So that's good.
Big fan. Well done.
Great country. Great place.
Yeah.
Great country. Best country.
Fantastic country. Very, very, very great country.
Very highly regarded country. Yeah.
Huge. Big country. Huge.
Anyway, Ferris does get up on a float, and until you'd said, Alex, I'd never realised that if you were mates with him and you were having this day off, especially if you're Cameron and you're not quite into it, and your wingman, the reason you're out in the first place, nicks off onto a float. Like,
I cannot believe you're saying this, Vicky. If the three of us were out in town and we couldn't find Alex and he's on a float singing, yeah. Would you be annoyed?
No, I wouldn't be annoyed.
Thank you.
This is what I'm saying. But this is like when we were out together and I'm like, hey, those people look interesting over there, and I go over and talk to them and you're like, that's rude. Like, that's what the reaction
should
be.
That's different.
Ferris. Let's just do that. If they were strangers, yeah, great. Let's go out and talk to strangers. They're other people that you would rather be hanging out with. You fucking know them.
Yes.
So you ditch us to go and talk to some other friends.
On the balcony.
Yeah.
At the Groucho.
So that's why it's
again.
An issue.
He's been gone 2 hours, Vicky.
Yeah, fuck it. Shall we go home? Yes.
He ain't coming back, is he?
No.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Maybe
it's
this
not
is,
the same thing.
Maybe this is my problem with this guy. I see too much of myself in
yeah, no
shit. You do. I think you do. Yeah. He's a psychopath. It was a revelation to me when I, years later, realised that the woman with the beautiful voice singing Dunkershen is Wayne Newton.
Who's that?
A man. He's a bloke with a very high-pitched voice, but
really?
It sounds like a woman, doesn't it?
Really
it sounds
does.
Like... and he's the guy that the mum fancies in Vegas Vacation, another John Hughes film.
Oh.
Wayne Newton playing at Las Vegas was his place.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, so Dunkershen's good and it's kind of funny, but then when it goes into the Beatles...
It's interesting because I find Twist and Shout as a song quite boring. It's too slow.
No.
It is too slow.
What?
It's the quality of the vocal is what makes
mad.
It.
Mad. Man,
no,
the Smiths
it's...
1 week, now the fucking Beatles. Jesus
no.
Christ.
Slow Twist and Shout.
It's
so fast. Come on, baby.
Let's literally sing. Come on, baby. Twist and shout.
It's come on, come on, twist and shout. It's that over the
it's
top.
This.
It's fast
two,
and slow.
Three, four. It's too slow. The quality.
How busy
of...
are you?
I'm just saying. The
that's
vocal is what makes it.
Well, did you see what
Vicky? Let's double drop.
Did you see what Paul McCartney said about it though?
He said
he
if
was
it
annoyed.
Needed brass, I'll do it in a northern accent because this is what it sounds like. If it needed brass, we'd have stuck it on ourselves.
Which is fair, I guess. But
great.
As John Hughes points out, that's in the film. They didn't add brass
band.
To his song. There's brass band playing in the movie.
I feel so sorry for John Hughes because he loves
Paul.
The Beatles.
Hey, Paul here. John, can you lose the brass?
He loves, like, John Hughes loves the Beatles so much, and Paul McCartney's like, yeah, you can have the song. What have you done to my song? And he's like, there's just a marching band in it, Paul, and it's would another, be weird if you another, couldn't hear him.
Another John I don't get on with.
A bit of background to this scene. So Jennifer Grey was a bit frustrated that she doesn't share any scenes with the stars of this film. She was sort of isolated for most of the movie. So that day she disguised herself and went on set and tried to get photographs with the actors. And there's some fun photographs of her in a disguise with people that she got taken.
That's brilliant.
But that day she met the bloke who choreographed the musical scene, Kenny Ortega, Dirty Dancing, a year later.
Isn't that amazing?
Oh, but he didn't cast her in Dirty Dancing.
No, but he might have said, I met a great dancer on the Von Steuben Day Parade.
In disguise.
In disguise. Well, let's at least see her.
Kenny, how long's this story?
I tell you who might be a psychopath, though, is Ferris's parents. In fact, the whole family, because we see the dad twisting in his office, and in the background, there's the family photos with a little brother and sister. Later on in the film, on the kitchen fridge, there's drawings by little children. There were two little children in that family that got cut out of the movie.
Oh, no.
So maybe they killed them.
Oh, my God.
Well, Cameron couldn't imagine them properly.
Yeah. I didn't pick up on that at all. That's a very dark turn. So, anyway, the
maybe,
car...
Yeah, maybe the dog killed them.
Well, that does seem plausible. And I shouldn't be that person that's like, oh, is it a Rottweiler? Yeah, it's scary. A Rottweiler, but I was scared shitless of them.
Yeah.
But anyway, okay, so Cameron's thing is the car, but the car is fine. So now he's going to loosen up because he's going to, you know, he's like, do you know what? This day might be all right. But oh no, there's a few more miles on the clock. This never works for me because you have to remember what Ferry said and you have to look at the speedometer and you have to understand that there's been a big difference and it's too quick. I don't know. I don't understand what's happened.
Yeah, yeah.
But I, you know.
And this is something as Hughes says, Ferris knew the speedometer trick wouldn't work when they got back. This was all part of the plan.
Wow, yeah. Because he's a psychopath who manipulated Cameron by telling him things that were lies so he could have the day he wanted to have.
No, but the speedometer thing is to help Cameron at the end to make him have to face his dad.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I think, so you think that Ferris, when he offers to take the rap for when the car goes through the window in a minute, that's his lowest point because he's lost control of the situation.
Well, John Hughes says that this is the one moment where Ferris loses his cool because, yeah, he's lost control because the plan was to get Cameron to stand up to his dad. The plan wasn't for Cameron to destroy his dad's car.
Oh, I see.
So it's gone further than he'd expected.
I see. I think
I agree with that much. I agree that he never planned for the car to be destroyed, but I agree that his reaction isn't like, he's worried about himself and his relationship with Cameron and how this may affect him being able to manipulate Cameron in the future, which is why he says to take the rap, not for any nice reason.
Okay. Well, before that, this is what I thought his lowest... But this is the low point of the film, which is Cameron sort of turns into a zombie because he's so, like, he can't fix this problem. Ferris, that's where Sloane is like, oh, I see what you've been doing and you wanted to give him this great day. And life for them at that age is moving too fast because they're both about to go to college and they're not going to see each other. I just think that's a nice thing to write a film about is a platonic friendship which is coming to a fork in the road and just trying to have one great day before everything changes forever.
And it's Ferris's last chance to do this with Cameron, to change him before they are, you know, completely separate. This is the end of things for them, probably.
Yeah. And so then we get the brilliant scene. Just brilliant, brilliant, because I do like a meet cute. So this is right up there. This might be the best meet cute ever. So Jean is in the police station because she's reported a break-in, which is Rooney, who she doesn't recognise even though she kicks him in the face.
Yep.
And he is her head teacher, so that's a bit odd. And
three kicks in the face.
It's a bit of the old Home Alone-style ultra-violence.
Yeah, that's true. Mm. That's true.
And it's sped up and her running is sped up and the screen's really over the top. It's just a bit of like it's a cartoon suddenly in the film, but it does make me laugh.
So what's the sequence? They're in the police station. Charlie Sheen's there. He's a mess. He's got a leather jacket on because he's a bad boy.
Yeah.
And then doesn't he just say to her, drugs? And she says, no thanks.
And he goes, drugs. Drugs?
I think he says, I meant, what are you in for? And she says something and she says, what about you? And he says, drugs.
Drugs,
that's just brilliant. And then they have this little meet cute thing where the sparks are supposed to fly, which I think they do. So he's still going, you wear too much eye makeup. Like my sister.
Sister wears too much eye makeup. Yeah. People think she's a whore.
Yeah, and also Jeannie doesn't wear too much eye makeup, FYI. But great, fine. I just love it. It's just such a weird thing to happen in the middle because you've got these scripts and you're like, we need to tie up Jeannie's arc. What can we do to loosen her up? She just meets this magical person that tells her what she needs to hear and then she never sees him again. I really like it.
Her, the way she goes down the stairs is very, very funny.
Well, you see this softness in her.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is great because she has been, she starts this movie as incredibly unlikable. Mm. And by the end, you love Jeannie. There's a whole case for like how she's a really strong female character. And by the end, because she uses her power to put Ferris in debt at the end, the leverage she has over him, yeah. she uses to put him in debt. And yeah. she's got a real agency about her.
And you might not like her, but the wink that Ferris gives her at the start of the film behind the parents' back is all the motivation she needs, I think, especially if you've ever had a sibling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Even though they don't seem like brother and sister, but that's because they were shagging. So that wrecks that.
That's fine.
It's
it was different times.
I have found.
It was the 80s.
It was the 80s, Victoria.
Wow, you had a very different childhood to me. So
Yorkshire, wasn't it?
That's the... Hey! God, you're right!
There we go.
Great callback, also true. You don't know what they get up to over there, my father would say to me. I'm trying to think of something else he said. And apart from don't trust people in white socks, which wasn't what my mum said, but that's true. Don't trust a Yorkshireman in white socks. Okay. Absolute power combo of nightmarishness.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I really know how to backfoot you in the future. Just turn up in white socks and yeah. leather black shoes.
Like, how do? Mm. Or is that Lancashire?
I don't know.
How do you greet each other in Yorkshire? Hey up. Yeah, no, we don't say that.
Hey up.
Maybe we say how do.
Lerra's Gerra's pudding down as...
What the fuck is that?
Let's eat dessert. Lerra's Gerra's pudding down as...
See what I mean? We grew up, 30 miles apart? I have no idea what you're talking about.
I knew that.
Yeah, of course.
Did you?
Yeah.
No. Oh, but you went to school in the north.
I did. Yeah. I did.
Where did you... Hull?
York.
Oh.
York.
Hull. Oh, you owe him an apology.
No. Hull is a beautiful city. It's changed a lot. The Haworth Arms in Hull, beautiful pub.
Okay.
Did my second ever stand-up gig there. Went very badly, but beautiful pub.
Anyway, so the car. They're running the car backwards.
Gets dark here. Cameron admits that he's been afraid and wishing he was dead. So to stick suicidal thoughts in the middle of your teen comedy,
I think it's
quite brave.
It is. And it's, if it came out of nowhere, which is, it would be hard. It's been gently introduced, hasn't it, at the beginning where he says, I want to die, he says, I'm dying. That's it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of in the mix, so you don't just get like smashed over the head with it. It is super dark and it's really grown up in a still quite cute kid way. Mm. And I do think, obviously, first of all, the comedy when he kicks the car and the car goes flying through the window. Mm-hmm. Hilarious, obviously. But then when he...
Really? I was tense. That scene makes me tense.
Because
I can't
you go
laugh.
Back to being in trouble. And also because I did crash a car, so I feel those feelings of like, I am in big trouble over a car.
And they do drag it out, though. It lasts a long time. It's builds and builds and builds. And you think they're not going to do it, are they? And then when they do, you're just... I don't know, because of the way he's spoken about his dad, you are quite frightened for him.
Yes, I am. Yeah, you're right. But I do think, I love the way, I think Alan Ruck is really good here where he's like, he's making peace with it and he says, I'm going to talk to him. And I think he either says it'll be good or he says it'll be great. And he's right, like this is something that they need to do.
I'm just tired of being afraid.
Yeah, and so I think Ferris has fixed him. And then, so we're moving into, we're like wrapping everything up. So Ferris has fixed Cameron. We know he's going to get fixed in terms of he's not going to get caught, but we'll have a fun sort of race to get home. But the thing with Sloane, I do get it, when she's like, he's going to marry me, and you think, oh, good for you two. That's lovely. Of course you would want to marry him, and of course you'd want to marry her. She's incredible. I just don't know, like, did she ever think it was in doubt? And I don't know, what's the button on that scene that, I don't know, is it just confirming that their relationship is great? Because he's about to go to college, and so the usual rite of passage is he's going to go to college and like probably shag loads of people. Mm. So then are they going to...
She's a year younger, isn't she?
Yeah, so they're not going to see each other as much as they might.
I think it's just there that she's confident, she knows.
For me, it was the fact, like, it was nice because I think, you know, she's sort of been a bit of a question mark throughout the movie. I haven't really understood how she really feels about Ferris, whether this is temporary for her, whether it is just a bit of fun, or whether it's something long-term. And for me, that is like, oh, wow, that adds a whole other level to their day that they spent together, that there is something bigger there and she does want to marry him.
Yeah.
There's a permanence to it.
Yes, which is, it's really sweet. It does work.
Although marriage isn't permanent, you know.
No, I guess not. No. Weird that you would mention that.
Is something wrong, Alex? As Ferris is... I'm glad you brought it up. So, we need to talk. You know a good lawyer. No, because his parents in real life, they got together on the movie, but then they broke up. Not his parents in real life, his parents in the movie.
Yeah, this production was an absolute
shagfest.
So he's racing Jeannie and he's racing his mom.
Turns into the swimmer. Have you seen the Burt Lancaster film, The Swimmer, where he goes through all the pools, all the gardens? The whole film is just him doing that. It's a very strange film. But it's so much fun because they've given us the ticking clock.
Yeah.
Mum and Dad and the police are coming home. And then you've got all these lovely little Ferris Bueller moments where he grabs the Coke or he runs past the girls in bikinis and then comes back.
That's a great visual
introduces himself. Oh.
That's a great visual gag. There's a really good Rooney visual gag at the start, which we covered in another movie, which totally lifts it, where Rooney is rushing through the school, but he doesn't want the kids in his classrooms to see him in a rush. So he walks slowly past the classrooms, then runs and then slowly past the classroom. It's the wedding plan joke at the start.
That's so funny that they nicked it. Mm. So Jeannie kind of saves Ferris at the end, which I didn't really get, but it's fine. The point is that she decides...
I think it's a nice switcheroo, but I think the point is Rooney's a bigger villain to her than her brother. Her brother she can deal with the parents, but when it's Rooney's involved, he's bigger than all of them. So she decides to side with Ferris.
Yeah, and she's listened to what Charlie Sheen said, because he's like, you've got to stop focusing on your brother away. And she's like, oh, okay, let's give that a whirl. And then Ferris gets to remind us what it was all about, because life moves pretty fast, and if you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
What I hadn't realised is that he gets into bed and then the stereo's still going.
Yeah.
He throws the baseball. I hadn't clocked. It's the one that he caught earlier in the film.
No!
Oh, it's so good! So good!
So then the extra stuff during the credits, which I'd never seen before...
How? I don't understand, because the film doesn't stop. No. It just goes straight into them. You just switch off.
I was so amazed.
While you're watching Rooney, do
it. A very efficient movie watch. Is it done? Right, go.
They're still talking. Hold on. The Race by Yellow's just come on.
Yeah.
No one switches off when that song comes on in the
80s. I know, but honestly, I was like, what's this? I don't like it.
I forgot.
You don't like it?
Oh, yeah.
You love that song.
I do. Yeah. I do, because of the 80s, because of The Secret of My Success in K-9 and this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot about K-9. No, I don't like it, because I think, because you're outside of the confines of the movie that you paid to see, you're outside of the narrative. When films do it... Wait, what?
I've got my money's worth. Thank you very much. Is this important to the structure of the film, or is this just... This doesn't fit with the structure. Fine, I'm out.
Quite right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That is how
the story has come to its natural conclusion. Bye-bye.
Is that not right?
Mark, get up. Get up.
Turn it off. Yeah, I do feel like that. The characters need to be so enticing outside the confines of a narrative that you'd want to see them do shit, and I don't.
Well, funny, this scene was earlier in the film.
The bus scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's funny.
Not the Ferris telling the viewer to go home scene. that was about 20 minutes in. That's it, it's over, go home.
I bet test screenings didn't go down very well. People like, find this confusing.
Yeah. And the idea there, I think...
20 minutes long.
I like that, because we've just watched Ferris get the upper hand on everyone, and then he kind of gets the upper hand on us by sort of making us feel a bit stupid.
Yeah.
And so I think that nicely ties into his character. Mm. I feel like it leaves me with quite a good feeling. It's just uncomfortable watching Geoffrey Jones on a bus with children eating their sweets.
Yeah.
You can Google it. We're not going to talk about it again. We've done it before. But Deadpool spoofed it quite nicely.
Yep.
Ryan Reynolds even does the checker checker himself.
And that's all I have.
There was a sequel. There was a talk of a sequel. Alan Ruck says, just for fun, I used to think, why don't they wait until Matthew and I are in our 70s and do Ferris Bueller Returns and have Cameron be in a nursing home? He doesn't really need to be there, but he's just decided his life is over. So he committed himself to a nursing home, and Ferris comes and breaks him out, and they go to like a titty bar.
Whoa, don't say that.
It's so disappointing to hear Alan Ruck use the phrase titty bar.
He might have said
it was a long time ago, yeah. It was a long time ago. Let's give
say what happens at the end, though.
And then at the end, all this ridiculous stuff happens. And at the end of the movie, Cameron dies.
I would watch the shit out of that film.
I sure would, yeah. It's a really good pitch, Bob, yeah. Titty Bar.
I remember when I spoke to Adam McKay, I asked him about Step Brothers sequel, and he said he'd only do it if it was the guys in a nursing home.
Yeah.
So we'll see that in 20 years. There was a TV series that didn't last very long.
Mm.
I have watched the pilot.
Oh, shit, I didn't
Charlie know. Slatter plays Ferris. An actress called Jennifer Aniston plays Jeannie.
Don't Don't know her.
And the opening scene is Charlie Slatter coming out.
That's depressing.
Did we really at the same time in unison? Don't know her. Funny.
It's a good gag.
We're great. Good. Carry on.
It's like if Waldorf and Waldorf.
I just said it because I knew you were going to say it. So I was like, I can't let you say it now.
Ferris comes out, talks about how the film didn't really capture him, pulls out a cardboard cutout from the movie of Brad Broderick and then chainsaws it.
Ooh.
So it's properly meta,
right.
Just not very funny. There's an election theory that Ferris grows up to be Broderick's character in Election, that he's the hero in high school and then he becomes the loser.
Oh, that's great.
And nothing works out for him. Yeah, I don't buy it, but no, it's fun.
It doesn't work, but that's a really interesting, because I think he's a psychopath. It's quite nice that things don't work out for him.
Yeah.
There's a horrible story, a nice story about Broderick and Gray's relationship. Do you want either of them or neither of them?
I know the horrible story.
Should we not say it?
I didn't like it. It made me feel sad.
What is it? Give me a rough thing without telling me the nitty gritty. Can you do that?
Some people died.
Oh, yeah. That one. I know. Right. Why would we even do that? Why is that up for debate? Don't ask that question.
You've got to do all the trivia.
You literally tell me off for doing all the trivia.
And Madonna told Jennifer Grey that she wrote the song Express Yourself about her relationship with Matthew Broderick and her breakup.
Nice.
And that's why in the chorus she says, "You'll do much better, baby, on your own," because she's referring to Jennifer Grey, aka Baby.
Wow.
Mm.
Wow.
She was telling her she could do better than Broderick and she shouldn't be sad.
Oh.
And she was with Johnny Depp at the time, so I don't know.
So great. Everyone's got to go out with him once.
there's a Johnny Depp story. We won't do that one either.
Right, let's do the bits then. So, Alex, what was your best scene?
Geoffrey Jones, aka Rooney, on a bus with school children.
Really?
I'm not even joking.
Are you being serious?
Just to give you a little bit, I'm half joking. I think that scene is just, as a performer, like Geoffrey Jones, it's a man getting on a bus after the day he's had, and he milks that for every laugh possible. Like, it's so much about the character, but no, obviously I'm not picking that from that look, so it's Twist and Shout. Not the scene I hated most, the scene I loved most. It's Twist and Shout.
Great. What about you?
That's the correct answer, but I'm going to say something different. I think the scene in the gallery is a really economical way of giving us some Cameron backstory in that, as I say, the more he looks at that painting, the less there is, and that's how he fizz. People see him.
It's haunting.
It's almost haunting. It's haunting. It's affecting.
No,
definitely.
It is haunting.
My favourite scene is Twist and Shout because it's iconic.
And so it's the best. And it is the best scene.
And again, but I've realised I hate musicals. I hate musicals. And then every time I see it in a film, I'm like, that's my favourite bit. So maybe I'm lying to myself.
I think oftentimes you're picking a film where there's one song in it, though, yes, rather than people bursting into song for 2 hours.
I think what I don't like is when people do the speak singing.
Yep,
I like singing and dancing. Because I'm not dead inside, but
okay.
I don't like speak singing.
Yeah. Like in Adventures in Babysitting.
Where's that?
In the blues bar.
Oh, that's... all right.
We'll do it on Thursday.
But yeah, put a
pin
save
in that. It, guys.
Sorry. What's your most valuable whatever, Chris?
I am going to say Jennifer Grey.
Wow.
Because I think to maintain that rage for 90 minutes is really impressive. And then when she just has that soft moment at the end, I think it's a really fun performance.
It's so good because she's so into him, but she's not going to see him again. And that's why I like it, because she's not like, I have to see you again. She's just like, this was brilliant. Bye. Yep. It's lovely. And you.
I was almost going to say Ben Stein as the economics teacher, because it's just such a standout scene. Mm-hmm. Anyone. But I'm going with Edie McClurg as Grace. I just think she's so funny in this movie, and I would like to see more of her in it.
Yep.
It's not my change, but I think she's very, very good in it.
Yep, agreed.
Matthew Broderick, because I think he's very good. Even if he's a psychopath, I like him. I'd like psychopaths, it's fine. People do. That's the thing about them, isn't
That's
it?
That's why people like
That's
Ferris, because he's
them.
A psychopath.
What would you change, Alex?
You mentioned it earlier. Of all the plot holes, it's the one that sort of, like, I thought about too much for it to not go unanswered in some way, which is Jeannie not recognising the principal who she literally tried to go and see about 10 minutes earlier, going, I want to see Rooney, to Grace.
Mm, yeah.
And then when she sees him. Now, granted, you could go, well, she's in a state of shock, she's an intruder in a house. Or you can go, actually, she knew it was him all along, and it plays into this long game that she's got about taking advantage of him at the end when she finds his wallet. And she's like, so I've outwitted you, and, you know, you can't have a go at Ferris because I know you broke into my house. I don't know.
You
don't know
when she kicks him in the face?
Yeah, where she sees him.
Doesn't she think he's a robber?
Yeah, but she see him.
But she knows it's her school principal. She's met him before.
He's looking quite bedraggled, though, isn't he?
Yeah, but maybe she sees they're staring face to face. So she knows who he is, and the film never sort of bothers to explain why she doesn't go, Rooney is in my house.
Yeah. What about you?
We've said a couple. You said one of mine. Get him in a pub.
there was a strip club.
Yeah, there was a strip club scene planned.
Really?
Yeah, but the producer said you don't have enough shooting days or money
for
this.
Can you imagine that? John Hughes goes, "We've got this. We've got the strip club scene." And Paramount go, "Yeah. Oh, it's such a shame. There's just not enough. We've got 40 days left. I know, but you're so busy on those 40
There was also a scene where Ferris phones into the Chicago radio station and says he's going to be the first teenager on the space station. And that was, I think it was even an LA trailer, but then the trailer debuted the day after the space shuttle disaster. And they pulled the prints.
Yeah.
Oh, God, Challenger. Yeah. Mm.
Actually, this one's too dark. I'm not going to say that one. How about, I've already said this one as well, but I think it would be funny to have a little flashback to when Ferris and Cameron are little kids and they could be dressed the same and we could just see a little bit of their friendship so I can understand it now.
Yeah,
and those same little mini versions of those clothes.
That's nice. That's a good one.
Yeah. Although John Hughes said on the commentary, I probably wouldn't put him in the beret now. He said the beret was a mistake.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because he looks...
It doesn't matter. It's the 80s. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. you might hate this change, actually, but I think we should see Cameron's dad come up the driveway and not speak, but just look at his son. That's it.
Oh, that was the thing I was going to say. It was too dark. I thought it should flash up on screen when the film ends. Cameron's father beat him to death that evening.
No.
That's different.
Wait, it's just an addendum to what Vicky was saying.
Yeah. I don't think he's physical with him. I think I'm projecting my assumptions, but he's a wealthy man and Cameron doesn't have any like bruises. So it seems like he's emotionally detached rather than like, or you don't have to be one or the other, obviously. You can do both if you're very time efficient. But I think if you see him, his shadow looms large over this film. So let's see the man and he comes up the driveway and Cameron's like, and you know that they're about to have the chat and you either make him the most not scary looking person you've ever seen in your life or you make him look normal but there's something in him that's a bit scary.
Or you make him look like Ferris and it's all fucking, it's all about Cameron looking for like a father figure in Ferris because Ferris takes him out on days out and does stuff with him and lets him be in the car that he's never allowed to be in.
Yeah.
So really Ferris is like,
what about his dad?
He's an image of his dad but the best version of his dad and it is all in Cameron's head, Fight Club theory.
What if they look out the window and Cameron's dad is underneath the car?
Just the legs.
Yeah, job done. Like the Wicked Witch. Yeah. Done. All right.
Oh, that's good. Okay. That's
good job.
And then the ruby slippers end up on Cameron's feet.
Yeah, not so good. Let's do a quiz. I've got another round of Crash of the Titles.
Oh, God.
Because it's so much fun watching you do this. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Number one, this film concerns a public access TV show about two metal-loving dudes fighting the undead.
The...
Oh, God's sake. I know one of them, obviously.
The first one.
The first one.
Okay.
But, so do they go in order? So is the first
one... Yeah, they go in order. They definitely go in order.
Okay.
Always go in order.
All right, so... And what was the second part?
Fighting the undead.
I say that's lots of stuff, so let me just... It's... Oh, I do know. Wayne's World War Z.
Yes!
Yes! Yes!
Well played, Vicky.
Thank you.
I heard that as two metal loving dudes fighting the undead is the second movie.
It's hard, isn't it? Yeah,
Never has been. It always goes in order.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Does it really? Okay, good.
No, but
okay.
I thought it was a movie about two metal loving dudes fighting the undead, which feels like a movie that is out there somewhere.
Okay.
Anyway, it doesn't
write
matter.
Write it. Number two. This one's a bit dirty. I'm sorry. Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones have a threesome with Scarlett Johansson.
Men in Black Widow.
Correct.
But also great.
Oh, Tommy Lee Jones. 10 years ago. 10 years ago.
Yes.
He could hang on to the crags in his face while you're doing it.
Number three.
Sorry, that's so distracting.
Number three. Not long after the Civil War, a group of sisters learn about life and love and talk to animals.
That is...
Oh, that's the... I have done that the wrong way around, sorry.
What?
Wait. Not long after the Civil War, A group of sisters. Okay. Oh, God.
Who can talk to animals? That's the first film.
Okay.
Oh, I don't.
Okay.
And Doctor Dolittle Women.
Correct.
Oh, you motherfucker. I knew that. I knew both of those things, but I don't know why.
But I
you're
going to
know. You're going to know.
But
both.
I said it far.
You're going to know both of these things as well. So,
those were things that I knew.
Again, this is I've done this the wrong way around.
For fuck's sake, Chris.
But it's because it connects last one. Another film revolving around sisters learning about life and love, mm-hmm. but these girls can see dead people.
There's Thick Sense and Sensibility.
Correct.
You deserve that. That was good. Sensibility.
All right, Vicky, you need this one.
I know.
A fish lady heads to New York and becomes Ralph Fiennes' housekeeper.
Oh, for God's sake. It's... It's
a fish lady.
Mm. Mermaid,
oh, the Little
in
Mermaid in Manhattan. The Little Mermaid in Manhattan.
Did you say it?
No, she said Mermaid in Manhattan. The Little Mermaid in Manhattan is the right answer.
I think.
I didn't get it right. I didn't. I hold my hand up. I'm trying to be gracious.
You were being gracious.
It's a win for Alex.
Oh, for
you can't
sake.
Come back from that 4-1.
Give it to her then. Give it to her.
No, it's all right.
No, you did. I mean, Mermaid in Manhattan could. I mean, could be a film called Mermaid. There isn't.
All right, let's do this then. You need this one, Vicky.
Okay.
A pair of werewolves leave their remote ranch to go read porn mags and swim.
I'm sick of this quiz.
Fucking hell. A pair of werewolves leave their ranch to read porn mags and swim. Werewolves.
We've talked a lot about the ranch and the porn mags and the swimming recently because we all quite like the film.
Do we?
Mm.
Porn mags and swimming.
Maybe should have won Best Picture this year.
Oh my God, this is just dead air now.
All right, shall I give it to
you?
Yeah. The Power of the Dog Soldiers.
Oh yeah, that's good. Well done. That's good.
Who reads porn mags? Oh yes, I forgot about that. Yeah, okay.
It's best bit in the film.
Is it? All right, good stuff.
Well done, Alex.
Well done, Alex.
Well played. So we're nearly done, but before we go, we need a clue. So Vicky, mm-hmm. give us a rubbish clue.
Are you ready?
Yes.
It's especially rubbish this week.
I can't wait. I'm so excited. I don't know why I'm so excited.
I spent maybe between 5 to 8 seconds on this. So here we go. Ready? Live twice as long and prosper. Fuck you.
They can't see you putting your middle finger up. Was that part of
no,
the clue?
The actual clue is live twice as long and prosper.
Very good.
Fuck you!
And that's a great clue. That's a great clue. We like it. We like it. All right. That really is your lot. If you want more, have a look at what we're up to at ClashPod on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to make us feel good, subscribe to the show and give us a review. As ever, thanks for listening. And we'll be back on Thursday with Adventures in Babysitting.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly. Seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.